Our linguist Jeff Nunberg has been following the presidential debates, listening to what the candidates have to say and what language they're using to say it. Jeff is the author of a book about political language called Talking Right, which has just come out in paperback. It analyzes the political vocabulary of the right and the left. Jeff teaches at the School of Information at the University of California at Berkeley. He chairs the usage panel of the American Heritage Dictionary. Well, hi, Jeff. Welcome back to the show. As a linguist, what are you listening for, and what have been your general impressions as you listen to the debates?
Well, you know, my real impression as I listen to the debates is mostly stupefaction. The other day after the Democratic debate in Iowa, I played about four or five of these things that I had had taped all together. It was like listening to a marathon of Last Comic Standing. You get one after another of these questions that really are not designed to elicit anything like a nuanced or insightful discussion of the issues, and these 30-second responses or show of hand. You know, do you have a gun in your house? Raise your hand. Tell us about your personal God. What decisive moment shaped your character? My daughter and I spent an hour on that one while she was doing her college application the other day. So if you listen to these at great length, you might feel that as far as advancing the democratic process, they're not very informative. At the same time, you do get a sense, I think, both of the individual candidates and of the kind of language that's going to be crucial in 2008 in determining how the country falls out.
Are you hearing shifts in how the candidates, Republicans and Democrats, are talking about the war in Iraq?
Oh, yeah. From both, but more from the Democrats a bit, but from the Republicans, too. This began really with the 2006 elections. The history of this administration's involvement in Iraq, in a sense, if you look back on it, you could think of as a series of linguistic miscues and slogan recalls, I think of them. So one after another, wanted dead or alive, morphed into we don't know where he is and we really don't care. And of course, there was mission accomplished just after the Iraq invasion, which I'm sure the administration wished immediately almost that it could take back and replace with something a little more non-committal, like way to go or something like that. There was bring them on. There was when they stand up, we'll stand down. And so on. And finally, in the fall of 2006, there's Bush saying, we've never been stay the course, which gave all of the news outlets, including Fox, an opportunity to run lots of clips of Bush saying exactly that. Now, if you listen to the Republican debates, you still hear people talking in those terms. Don't stampede for the exit signs. We've got to support the troops and so on. But those comments are aimed largely at a Republican base that's going to be determine who wins in the primaries. And it's not clear whether that has any more purchase with the larger electorate. And one thing that's significant, for example, is that the Democrats who are talking about withdrawing, and there's really a question of just when. Is it going to be immediately? Is it going to be 9 months? Is it going to be 12 months and so on? Are not defensive about that and don't need to make a show of saying we support the troops. In fact, when they bring that up, it's only by way of justifying their votes to continue funding the war. So there's a sense, if you listen to both sides, of an acknowledgement, implicit or not, that the voters are very much troubled about the war and that public opinion has shifted against the war.
Jeff, do you have a clip you can play of something that struck you as an interesting rhetorical style in talking about the war in Iraq?
Yeah, when you listen to the way the Republicans in particular talk about the war, there's this effort, most notably from Giuliani, but also from McCain and Romney and most of the other candidates, to defocus Iraq and make this more a question of the struggle against terrorism, or as the Republicans are continually putting it, Islamic terrorism. Here's Giuliani, for example, faulting the Democrats for not talking about Islamic terrorism.
In four Democratic debates, not a single Democratic candidate said the word Islamic terrorism. Now, that is taking political correctness to extremes. It really is.
So now, the reality is
that you do not achieve peace through weakness and appeasement. Weakness and appeasement should not be a policy of the American government. We should seek a victory in Iraq and in Baghdad, and we should define the victory. And I thought the piece by O'Hanlon and Pollock last week in the New York Times, which I have to frankly tell you, when I read it in the morning, I read it twice, and I checked New York Times, but it was the New York Times. It was. And it said, we just might win in Iraq. Now, why we would want to retreat in the face of at least some empirical evidence that General Petraeus...
But that's military progress, no political progress. You'd continue to support the surge even if there's no political progress.
The reality is that if we can bring stability to Iraq and we can give them a chance to develop stability, that's what we should be trying to accomplish. This is part of an overall terrorist war against the United States. And that's why I noted Senator McCain's statement.
Jeff, what else do you hear in that clip that stands out for you in terms of the language that Giuliani's using?
Well, on the one hand, there's clearly an appeal to that part of the Republican base, the people who'll be voting in the primaries, who still think that we have to stay the course and hold out for victory in Iraq. On the other hand, what's going to be more interesting, I think, particularly in the general election, is this continuing effort to make the war in Iraq seem, as Giuliani puts it, part of an overall terrorist war against the United States, and in particular an Islamic terrorist war against the United States. And in a sense, this continues the neoconservative line on what this struggle's about.
In your book, Talking Right, you analyze the language of the left and the right. Are you hearing coded language in the presidential debates? And if so, what are some of the linguistic battlefields?
Yeah, I think it's clearest, for example, when you listen to the way people talk about health insurance. Everybody agrees this is a problem. And while the Republicans are still saying we have the greatest system of health care in the world, they are, at least the front runners, are not denying that there are problems and that have to be resolved. Now, when you listen to the Democrats talk about it, you hear this, well, I guess it's sort of a revived populist language. People are talking about special interest, entrenched interest, insurance companies lining the pockets of big business. These are the phrases you're hearing, not just from Obama and Edwards, but from Clinton as well. They're talking tough on trade and job outsourcing and rising inequality and so on. The Republicans don't, for example, ever talk about insurance companies or pharmaceutical companies. Those phrases are just about absent from the debates. What they do talk about is market-based solutions. Or market solutions. The idea being, in that way of thinking of things, that, well, it's the market and the government, and these are these two opposing ways of thinking about things. And what they're trying to do is retain this old sense of the government as demonized. That's worked very well for the Republicans since the Reagan years. Really, it was Reagan, although it had been around before that, who established this idea: government is part of the problem, not part of the solution. The scariest words in the English language are "I'm from the government and I'm here to help," and so on. So that Republicans evoke government, that word, as a kind of boogeyman, and are hoping that in so doing they can retain a market-based approach. Now, whether that will still work is hard to know. The role of government is going to be a crucial issue in the 2008 elections and going forward, whether the Republican rhetoric can be maintained. For instance, the Republicans continue to talk about socialized medicine. Tancredo even talks about womb-to-tomb medical care. That's a phrase I thought had died out in 1973. Whether that still has the power as a specter to frighten the American people remains to be seen, because there is an increasing concern about government's failure to deliver in Katrina, on health care, with regard to infrastructure, pensions and retirement, and so on. And that's really, I think, where the struggle between left and right is going to be fought out, both substantively and linguistically, over the coming years.
Jeff, do you think the so-called values issues are the issues where language, political language, is most loaded? And I'm thinking about issues like abortion, gay marriage. And are you hearing as much about those issues, and are you hearing, you know, loaded or coded language in discussing those issues?
You're hearing that among the Republicans in these catfights over who was pro-life when and how pro-life is Romney and what did he sign when he was governor of Massachusetts. And this will certainly come up with Giuliani over the course of the campaign. You hear, I think, less of them than you would have certainly in 2004. The the issue, for instance, of don't ask, don't tell, when the Republicans are asked about that, their answer tends to be, well, this isn't the time to bring this up. We're in the middle of a war and so on. So they avoid the question on tactical grounds rather than on grounds of principle. The Democrats at the same time, they all appeared in the Logo Network to address issues of interest to gay and lesbian Americans. Apart from Kucinich, they all declared strong support for civil unions and expressed reservations about gay marriage. But these aren't going to be in the primaries, at least, strong issues, evidently, apart from abortion, perhaps, among the Republicans. Whether they'll emerge in 2008 in the general elections as important issues remains to be seen. My sense is they're going to be less important than they have been in the last few issues, last few elections, partly because the war is so important and partly because economic concerns are beginning to become equally important to Americans.
Jeff, in your book, Talking Right, you suggested that Democrats should learn from the Republicans and adopt a new populist language. Do you hear that happening in the debates?
Yeah, I think you hear that happening actually from before the debates. You could hear it certainly in the 2000, a lot of the 2006 senatorial campaigns, Tester in Montana, Webb in Virginia, Casey in Pennsylvania, Klobuchar in Minnesota, Sherrod Brown in Ohio, certainly. Now, some of these people were described as centrist or conservative Democrats because of their positions on social issues, Tester and Webb, for example. But all of them were arguing a very strong case for economic populism. And I think the fact that they were identified at the time as conservative Democrats is an indication of how the liberal-conservative distinctions sorted out now, so that your position on abortion, say, is to people much more important in determining whether you're a liberal or a conservative than your position, say, on health care. But I think that the increased concern over these issues, the increased use of this populist language, and not the populist language of the Republicans, but the sort of truly populist language or historically populist language in any event, is a sign perhaps that that distinction is being redefined in more in its traditional terms around economic issues than around social issues, so that issues like health care, education, pensions, and so on become more crucial in deciding who's a liberal and who's a conservative than questions like abortion and gun control.
My guest is Fresh Air's linguist, Jeff Nunberg. We're talking about the language of the presidential debates. His book about the language of politics has just come out in paperback. It's called Talking Right. Now, you wrote that conservatives had managed to move the center of gravity of American political language to the right. Do you hear any shift in that while you listen to the presidential debates?
Well, it's too early to say. The after the 2004 elections in particular, there was this great concern among the Democrats about having lost the framing wars and needing to reframe and remessage and so forth. A lot of that was just about the Republican skill at framing bumper stickers. No Child Left Behind, Clear Skies, Healthy Forest, things like that. I think the lesson of the 2006 elections, particularly with regard to the war, but with regard to other things in addition, is that bumper stickers only take you so far. I think the Republicans' real advantage has been in their ownership of notions like values, tradition, bias is an important term, and their ability to stigmatize the liberal label itself. And those are linguistic advantages that come not just from using the words, but from building the words into a set of very powerful narratives. At this point, it isn't clear yet whether the Democrats are going to be able to redress that balance by creating narratives of their own and language that stands for it. Right now, though the Democrats enjoy an advantage, certainly because of general dissatisfaction with the war and with the administration, there isn't yet the sense that the Democratic Party stands for something in the way there is that the Republican Party stands for something, and that still is something they're going to have to redress.
You mentioned that the word liberal has been stigmatized. Hillary Clinton, in one of the debates, this was in the YouTube debate, she was asked by one of the YouTubers if she was a liberal. Let's hear a clip of that, and then I'd be interested in hearing what you thought of her response to this question.
Hi, my name is Rob Porter, and I'm from Irvine, California. I have a question for Hillary Clinton. Mrs. Clinton, how would you define the word liberal? And would you use this word to describe yourself? Thank you.
No, Rob. You know, it is a word that originally meant that you were for freedom, that you were for the freedom to achieve, that you were willing to stand against big power and on behalf of the individual. Unfortunately, in the last 30, 40 years, it has been turned up on its head, and it's been made to seem as though it is a word that describes big government, totally contrary to what its meaning was in the 19th and early 20th century. I prefer the word progressive, which has a real American meaning, going back to the progressive era at the beginning of the 20th century. I consider myself a modern progressive, someone who believes strongly in individual rights and freedoms, who believes that we are better as a society when we're working together, and when we find ways to help those who may not have all the advantages in life get the tools they need to lead a more productive life for themselves and their families. So,
Jeff, do you hear that as a clue that Democrats are trying to substitute the word progressive for the word liberal because the word liberal has been stigmatized?
Oh, sure. Democrats have been trying to do that for a long time. And if anybody can make it happen, I suppose it's Hillary Clinton. They've given how the word liberal has been trashed and loaded with all these invidious stereotypes. They want to revive this progressive label going back, as Clinton suggests, to the beginning of the 20th century, or some people take it back to 1948 and Henry Wallace and the progressive campaigns. And there's a set, when I see this, I think of what the Ford Motor Company tried to do in 1960 when the Edsel line kind of collapsed, and they stopped they stopped making Edsel cars, but they continued to make some of the same cars, only branded them as a Galaxy, and they did very well for a number of years on the assumption that nobody would notice it was the same car. And you sometimes have that sense about the progressive label. And if you abandon the liberal label, as Clinton and a lot of other Democrats would like to do, you basically hand it over to the Republicans and the right to define. One interesting side note to this is that, in fact, if you look at polls, for the first time in about 25 years, the number of people who call themselves liberals in America is actually going up. It isn't yet even with the number of people who describe themselves as conservatives, but it's gone up substantially after about 25 years of being under 20%.
You've been watching all of the debates. Do you see them as actual debates? I mean, when you know, like, do you see them as being, you know, traditional debates, the way the word debate used to mean?
No, they have nothing to do with debates in the traditional sense. Not only are they nothing that a high school or college debating team would recognize, but they really don't have a lot to do with this effort to lay out and explore the issues in any detail. The whole system militates against that, and the way they're done, the triviality of the questions, the effort to create these gotcha moments to set up little confrontations between the candidates and so on, all are aimed at anything but a serious exploration of the issues. And it may be that just modern American televised politics isn't capable of doing that, and that's the one thing you can hope that ultimately the Internet or new technologies will be able to supply, but that isn't clear either.
No, it's maybe heading in the other way.
Right,
isn't it in
right,
some ways? Because the Internet is where all the gaffes are spread.
The
all
Internet,
the
right,
embarrassing the moments.
Yeah. Right, your macaca moment is instantly
exactly.
out on YouTube.
Exactly.
And also with the Internet, you basically can live your entire life without encountering anybody whose politics are remotely different from yours.
Well, Jeff, thanks a lot for talking with us.
Thanks so much, Terry.
Jeff Nunberg is Fresh Air's linguist. His book about the language of politics, Talking Right, has just come out in paperback.